JX World War III update. The price of gold is skyrocketing once again. The mercury is rising. When this number goes over 3,000, I have no idea how bad things are going to get, but it's going to be a lot worse than it is now. It's the barometer for social chaos. Over 4,000, I suspect a nuke will absolutely have dropped post 4,000. Post 5,000, you're not going to want to go outside. That means the disintegration of the U.S. empire and relegating our sphere of influence only to within our own borders or possible civil war at that point in time. So this signifies the decay of soft and hard power. It's the debasement of not only the currency, but the U.S.'s position of influence around the world. We've been operating in the 2,000 to 500 range, and that is just post October 7th. So that includes a flare-up of hostilities in the Middle East, and that prices in increased nuclear brinkmanship in Europe, which is right now teetering on a razor's edge, and we're only at 2,646. And this is with all of the mechanisms of suppression and the plunge protection team. Just wait until Pandora's box really opens when shit gets real in the Middle East, which is what is happening right now and is about to happen in Europe, as well as Europe has now effectively greenlit Ukraine to start using NATO weapons to go to nuclear war with Russia. This is absolutely crazy. Now, Hassan Nasrallah is going to come out and give another speech, another nothing burger speech, until his handlers unleash the Kraken, which will be their much bigger missiles. They've yet to transcend this level of missile technology. They've yet to use their big stuff that we know they have because they've shown us videos. We've seen the videos. Okay, this is the video of some of their bunkers. We know that they have far more advanced tunnel networks, bunker systems. They're somewhere in between an Iran and a Hamas in terms of their capabilities. But they don't have air defense capabilities, which is why Israel can fly surveillance drones around. They can basically do whatever they want with international impunity as well, I should add, in terms of violations of Geneva Conventions and whatnot. And essentially, they're just waiting for a ground war. That's what they're doing right now. And once they start that ground war, they have to be concerned about retaliation. So they got their second guy killed today, along with 12 of his commanders. This was a massive blow. Every single red line that you can imagine has been crossed at this point in time. If only one high-ranking Israeli official or commander was taken out, they would probably escalate things to the fullest extent possible. Here you have Hezbollah sitting on their hands. Why is that? There's only a few possible explanations, and they could be the following. It could be that, again, their hands are tied by the Iranian Axis, the ones who provide them with these weapon systems, and they're saying, don't do anything yet, because there's a much bigger plan day X coming, a day when we just flip the table, as Soleimani used to say, the guy that Trump assassinated. That was the longstanding plan, according to Western intelligence, that they ultimately did want to basically get rid of the Israeli and American influence within the region altogether. And to do that, they would start a major war. Yet Israel is one step ahead of Hezbollah at every turn at this point. Every possible red line has been overstepped, including launching the biggest ever kinetic cyber attack in history. Now, the only other reason why is that either they're cowards, which we know they're not. I mean, you can say whatever you want about a lot of these Islamist fighters, but they're certainly not cowards. In fact, they welcome martyrdom, many of them. So it's certainly not that. It's certainly not a case of a capability, because we know they have the capability, so it's got to be something politically motivated, unless they're so compromised that they just can't get them off the ground. And all of these strikes that Israel is doing, particularly the ones in southern Lebanon yesterday, actually did interdict a major 1,000 strong retaliation that they claim that Hezbollah was planning. So it could just be that every time Hezbollah goes to launch a huge volley of missiles, Israel intelligence, because they got their tentacles running very, very deep, they are able to intercept it. And proof of that is the fact that within minutes of this strike happening today, Israel had already confirmed that this guy was dead. Well, how would you know that? And we're talking about publishing it on major Israeli media websites. Official sources confirmed that. How would you know that he was buried under the rubble? How would you know that maybe he didn't get out just in time? The only way you would know that is if there were many informants on the ground. And it's long been understood that there indeed is a very strong Mossad presence within this region, which likely has most of the chain of command compromised, which is why they were able to do what they did. Now, where should we go with this? I think just in terms of all the details that I'll rattle off really quick here. So Lebanon will be closing public and private schools next week, signifying that they expect that this thing is going to continue to ramp up to a full-blown war. Joe Biden essentially believes that the possibility for any sort of peace deal is now virtually nil, and that this will absolutely escalate into a full-blown war in the coming days ahead. Benjamin Netanyahu is going to be convening a special security session tonight as they prepare for a dramatic escalation in the conflict. We've had a U.S. airbase attacked once again with 12 rockets in Anbar. I don't think there was any casualties in that attack. And according to the Iranian embassy in Beirut, a green light has been given to Hezbollah to go to war with Israel. The question is, are they going to take it? Is that a part of their strategy? With every L Hezbollah takes, all of the copers come out of the woodwork and they say, oh, this is all part of the grand attritional plan. But if you ask me, that's like going into a fight and letting a guy punch you in the face until he gets tired. It's just not a winning strategy in the long run. You may be right if you got a very thick skull, but you're going to get a lot of brain damage in the process. So not a good strategy at all. They could be possibly worried about a nuclear reprisal, as I stated yesterday, because of course, Lebanon, the prevailing winds, depending on the time of year, can be north to south. If they were to do some sort of ground-based nuclear detonation, that radioactive fallout would head for Israel rather quickly. And presumably that's what they would do, because that's where all of Lebanon's assets, military assets, are stored, is underground primarily. So that could be part of the reason why they don't want to go that route. Israel is trying to develop a casus belli to go to war with Iran. This guy was busted, allegedly was paid by the Iranians to try and assassinate Netanyahu. He seems pretty happy for a guy who just got booked. This is an Israeli guy, okay? So you really have to wonder, is this just another Mossad operation carefully crafted to provide casus belli to go to war with Iran? It very well could be. Now, I want to talk about this because this doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Correct me if I'm wrong, and sincerely, correct me if I'm wrong in the comment section below. The information that made the claim that there was explosive powder put in the pagers of these digital devices that Hezbollah, of course, succumbed to just a few days ago, all of the information that is being cited originates from these three anonymous U.S. officials that the New York Times cites. So these are anonymous U.S. officials. We don't know what they're officials of. They could be the official custodians of the White House washrooms for all we know. But every media agency is recursively referencing this same story and building these grand narratives on the basis of it, and I can't find any other information outside this that corroborates it. Now, I could be wrong. There could be something lost in the weeds somewhere. But what's interesting is that within an hour of this event happening, this absolutely unparalleled event in human history in terms of cyber warfare, marrying kinetic warfare, is that within an hour of it happening, you had pretty much every media in unison citing these three anonymous U.S. officials who the U.S. government and the Israeli government, who haven't claimed responsibility for this, I should add, they have not made any attempt to talk about whether or not they've had conversations with these individuals, how they've gotten this information. We just take the New York Times and their three, I mean, for all we know, this could just be something the New York Times made up. Now, I don't think they would do that because, of course, their reputation, they still do have a reputation to uphold despite the media oligopoly and all that good stuff. But they still have to have, you know, so it could be that these three officials are part of some intelligence operation to feed people disinformation. Because it's very important when there is a flashbulb event like this. Flashbulb event is when something is like hard-coded into your autobiographical memory and it's etched in there deeply and you remember where you were when it happened. You probably remember where you were when you heard about the Trump assassination attempt. That's because that was a, you know, that was a bombshell event. So in the same way, they have to catch it because there's a short window where people are very emotionally impressionable. And so within an hour, New York Times releases a story and everybody's circulating it. And they just continue to go back and reference and recursively reference that story, blowing it up. And then you have experts referencing that and then other people referencing those experts. And then it seems like this is just the de facto narrative when really, this entire explanation that there's explosive powder put in these devices originated from these three unnamed officials. Now, why am I saying this? It's very worrying because what this could potentially mean if this story is not true and it's just a story that's been put there to disinform or take attention away from something else is that there's a much greater potential for manipulation of electronic devices. Notice that all of a sudden they're saying now that this operation could have taken 15 years and that they had to, you know, do all this work for building all these shell companies. And already there's, you know, people who are investigating the companies and all this stuff. And nothing really concrete has come of all these investigations because I think it might all just be a bunch of bullshit, red herrings to send people on a wild goose chase. Because the real concern here is that all of our electronic devices are potential ticking time bombs. Any Internet of Things device that has a lithium battery in it can potentially, number one, catch fire. Everybody seen the videos. Every type of lithium battery has the capability to have a thermal runaway effect if it's improperly stored or improperly wired or it overheats for some reason. And it can cause a fire and in some cases an explosion, the device itself being like shrapnel. Now, the argument is that the batteries themselves would not have had the capability in order to emit such a powerful explosion that we would see the damage that we've seen thus far. Now, I know some people who've had their phones light on fire in their pants and they've gotten very injured by just it lighting fire, never mind it exploding. And when this lithium explodes, it's like a napalm. Like you can't put it out. Okay, it's a fire, it'll burn underwater, even. There's plenty of videos of that. So the question is, are they lying about how far reaching and how extensive this operation is? And they're adding in that, oh, it took 15 years to make it seem like, yeah, this is possible, but it's very unlikely to be happening anywhere else. Now, the entire axis, including Russia and even China to an extent, even though everything is made there and probably they have a good handle, they're the mouth of the industrial global output. So it's probably happening after that step in the supply chain. These things go to Europe if there is explosives. And if there is, because immediately they wanted to implant in the public's mind that there was explosives being put into these devices, yet there has been no official confirmation of this by the White House, by the Israelis even. So we're just presuming that that's the case, but what if this was just a cyber attack, a very sophisticated one? They found a way to mess with the battery system or the software, and maybe it was just the batteries that they were using inside these devices that was detonating. Of course, there's reports of solar systems, electric cars, a variety of other things that went boom that were not these walkie-talkies and these pagers. So I still think the jury's out on this, but I know the way that this has been crafted by the mainstream media, everybody should be suspicious of the explanation. It would be one thing if these three officials, you know, were disclosed what their identities were, what their affiliations were, how they got this information, why they were at liberty to discuss these things, you know, to really just provide a bit more nuance and context. That would, you know, then I would probably be like, okay, it's a plausible explanation. But the fact that they're not disclosing any of that, and we're just believing a private corporation and treating them as if they are the official source of anything simply because they're viewed as a reputable Western media agency, not counting the fact that should they not be in some way beholden to the government, inquiring and interrogating them as to why, how they got this information. Isn't that information the government would want to know? So this is very, very fishy, if you ask me. And now, interestingly, they're already blaming the Chinese for it, okay? Pardon the Cyrillic here on the screen. My Russian handlers forgot to take that off the screen before they sent it my way. Actually, this is just a video. This is the one version of this that I could find to play for you guys. But, okay, so this is from Fox News. Apparently, this last guy's name is Chang. So, you know, if they're going to talk about China, to give it more credit, they got a guy with the last name Chang, I guess. So he's talking about how China could now use supply chains to copy Israel's device hack to harm the U.S. And this is how they're going to probably try to ban electronic devices move forward with the DJI drone ban that they reference in this particular video. And of course, if Trump gets in, then I think that he'll probably follow through with that no problem, because it's perfectly in line with the America Industrial First policy. Let's hear what he has to say.
Israel had to infiltrate the supply chain. China doesn't have to do that.
Again, this is all on the basis of these three unnamed anonymous officials, as far as I know.
Because it is the beginning of the supply chain. They manufacture all of this stuff. So if we're talking about pagers, walkie-talkies, but remember, also home solar systems, which means your toaster, you can do all of these devices can be laced with explosives. And so therefore,
unless you have a smart toaster that runs on lithium, I don't think you have to worry.
Everything that we buy from China can be a weapon against the United States.
And one thing we were talking about during the...
So, yeah, Israel just blew up a bunch of Hezbollah operatives and a bunch of civilians as well, and it's China's fault. As if they just discovered this, that this was a threat, right? Wow, incredible. Anyways, he goes on to talk about how, you know, China's a threat, blah, blah, blah.
China, which means that China can speed up or stop your heart, your pacemaker. It can close your front door. It can actually drive your car off the cliff.
Look,
Israel.
Well, Tesla can do that too. More on that in just a minute. I'm telling you guys, things are getting crazy. This brings a whole new dimension to warfare. We have the USS Harry Truman heading back to the Mediterranean once again. So the war is going to continue to escalate. This is another document that details how the pagers that were used began shipping in the summer of 2022. So prior, again, to October 7th. So you have to ask yourself this. If you're arguing from good faith, how is it that Israel decided to, how did they know that there was going to be a situation in the future that was going to necessitate the detonation of so many devices? And how careless is it to send out a bunch of explosive devices in the first place, knowing that people could travel, they could go on planes? So there's so many unknowns here and that don't really make sense from a explosive powder point of view, that call into question and bring up issues with respect to international laws, Geneva Conventions, things like that. So if they're going with this narrative that since 2022, these things have been floating around out there and they all had explosive potential, then they also have to explain what would have happened had this gone off on a plane. Now they'll say, oh, well, it didn't go off on a plane. And then the question is, okay, you know, what is the possibility that none of these things would have exploded if there's thousands of them out there? Okay, so clearly this was a very sophisticated, foolproof hack. It would have had to been, because if any one of them had gone off, the whole plan would have been foiled. So this is why something's fishy here. I think that there is a very good possibility that either this was on the battery level, which some of the arguments claim it was, but in the sense that they could do this without inputting any kind of explosive powder in it. And that, of course, is very worrisome, considering that in your home, you probably have 20 things that connect to the internet. I'm not sure what the average is, but I think it's at least a dozen and above. We talk about all your smartphones, all your smart TVs, your fridge, your lithium battery banks, your wireless earbuds, your computer, everything is connected to the Internet of Things, and all these things are potential attack vectors for hackers. So we have to be asking ourselves at this point in time, if the shit does go down, and he might be right, maybe the Chinese have an equivalent that they're going to utilize when Day X arrives. But when Day X comes, this is a new thing that we as preppers have to prepare for. We always have prepared for EMP, putting our electronics into Faraday cages to make sure that the circuitry doesn't get fried. Now we have to worry about our devices exploding. And I think that will be what comes first. Now we know that the ultimate trump card for cyber warfare is the kinetic aspect, the self-destruct aspect. Who's to say that when China and the United States eventually do go to war, that all our electronic devices past a certain date aren't just going to self-destruct, maybe not explode, but even just in their self-destruction, that would cause massive damages to our critical infrastructure. Now, let's move on to Russia. I forgot to mention yesterday that CERN, the guys who do the Hadron Collider thing, they've given Russia the boot. And this is just another sign of global decoupling and rising escalation of tensions. CERN, the world's premier nuclear research facility, says that Russian scientists will be expelling hundreds from its labs, ending nearly 60 years of collaboration with Moscow. What is going on inside Russia? Well, as I indicated, the European Parliament has voted by a wide margin to support the Ukrainians utilizing long-range weapon systems inside Russia. This is going to have drastic implications. Now, the rumor on the street is that this has already been approved and that it's going to be unveiled to the public next week in the form of a direct hit. So we're not going to know about it until we first hear about it. And so the Storm Shadows will be used inside Russia, or ATACMS, or JASMs, or some other missile is going to be used inside Russia. It's not going to be announced. You're not going to get a official public approval from the White House or anything like that. It's just going to happen. And they're saying that they don't want to telegraph to Vladimir Putin. That's why they're doing it this way. I don't think it matters at this point in light of the damage that has been recently done just by Ukrainian weapon systems inside Russia. But the reason why they're concerned about these weapon systems is, of course, there's the potential that they could carry nuclear weapons. The Russians must presume that there's a risk of a nuke being put on one of these and that it's going to be a cover for a preemptive strike, thereby putting them on a maximal state of readiness. And this is why, according to Russian media, I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to show you this anymore, because of course all these stringent dystopian Orwellian laws coming down the pike as we approach Day X. As the price of gold rises, so does censorship. That's another good way of looking at it. Russia wants no nuclear war, Lavrov. What this means is that this is the most explicit threat to the United States when they write an article like this, because they're telling you that This is basically a threat, the beginning of a threat. This is how you threat. We don't want to have to do this, but, right? The foreign minister still reassured that Russia possesses weapons that will have serious implications for the handlers of the Ukrainian regime. So they're saying that we're going to nuke the United States. Now, to hear Lavrov have given up in such a way, for him to be so just dismayed with the inability of the West to want to have any sort of diplomatic negotiation over this issue is very telling, okay? So essentially, what he has said is that, I can assure you that we have weapons that will have serious consequences for the masters of the Ukrainian regime. These weapons are available, and they're in a full state of combat readiness. That's a very important part of the quote to understand. So we know that the Storm Shadow missiles are going to be unveiled in a non-public display, which is going to allow Ukraine to strike in the dark. Permission to strike Russia with Storm Shadow missiles may be approved as early as next week and will be non-public so as not to give Russia additional warning about a possible attack. Great Britain and the U.S. could allow these missiles to be used in a private agreement. Public disclosure will only happen after the first strike. Western diplomats may sign this decision but avoid public statements to prevent a warning from Russia. The U.S. wants to first review Zelensky's plan for ending the war and how strikes on Russia would help Ukraine. This is all nonsense because they have the plans. They help co-write the plans. I mean, this is just forestalling. NATO wants to show unity in decision-making without UK and US dominance, while the EU has already placed their vote, essentially. Some believe that Biden might only approve strikes after the US elections in November. And if that's true, then that means the scariest time is not in the run-up to the election, but afterwards, in that interim, in the lame duck phase. That's going to be the scariest time. This guy keeps saying the same thing. He oversees Trump security detail, I believe, Secret Service. And here's what he has to say again. What's going on here? Oh, we're muted. There we go.
But I think the importance here is we have to be able to, at a moment's notice, surge people to where they need to go. And if we're going to be having to mitigate, and that's what we do. We're in the risk mitigation business. We are not in the risk elimination business. And so we have to be able to have the personnel, the assets, and be able to spread those out for an indefinite period of time in the event that another situation, a geopolitical conflict, or some other tension requires us to do so.
Why does he keep saying that? Like, what does... I mean, really, sure, in a very meta-analysis type way, geopolitical events pertain to Trump being threatening, having his life threatened. But what does that have to do with Trump's security detail? It really doesn't have to do anything. It's almost as if he doesn't seem like the sharpest knife in the drawer, really. But And I mean, that's just based on his press appearances, maybe in his line of work, he does just fine. He did prevent Trump from succumbing to the second assassin. But why do they keep bringing that up? Almost as if they know that there's going to be framing that tries to frame some other country as being the ones who wanted to take out Trump. And of course, we're talking about Iran. Now, I believe it was Matt Gaetz and Alex Jones that are floating this theory that there's 5 trained assassin teams and that are in the United States and that they've been in some way authorized by the Iranians to try to take out Trump. Again, this just fuels the pro-Middle Eastern war narrative. So how do we know if that's true or not? Now, of course, we know that the Iranians don't like Trump. Trump killed their top guy. So, of course, they still want revenge. They view him as a criminal. They have an arrest warrant out for him, not honored by Interpol, obviously. But they do want revenge against Donald Trump. So is it beyond the realm of possibility? No. It's very possible that the Iranians have a vested interest in taking out Trump because they know that means that he's going to escalate in the Middle East. But the question is, we also have to balance that with the interests of the military-industrial complex. So, you know, I think that this guy, he's telling us what's going to happen, and maybe he's reading some kind of script in his brain because he's not used to doing these press conferences, and he's maybe letting on a little bit more than is necessary. What else do we got here? Let's finish this up. So, okay, this was the massive explosion that we've seen. This was the ammo depot where that explosion took place. Everything in red is dead. Basically, 75% of this facility is toast. The yellow are parts that are partially damaged. And is that blue? I'm kind of colorblind. That is parts that were unaffected. So you can see here the damage. I'm not sure if you guys can see this on there, but a lot of these so-called nuclear-proof bunkers were able to penetrate and, of course, creating the mother of all explosions, 30,000 tons of munitions up in smoke. They claim it's about 150,000 shells and that the Russians can produce 10,000 a week. So, you know, that's a pretty big blow, despite what a lot of the people who are trying to downplay it are saying. There are numerous more of these facilities around. This is not the only. I mean, the Russians have all kinds of weapon storage depots all throughout Russia, big ones. And the thinking is, though, is that the Ukrainians are saying how they were able to penetrate this nuclear-proof bunker is that some of the ammunition was stored outside or was being moved into the depot, and they just got lucky and they were able to hit one of these, and then it kind of had a chain reaction where it kept exploding to the next one. I don't know if I necessarily believe that, because that explosion that we seen, that looked instantaneous. Like that big, massive explosion that we seen, it wasn't just a bunch of little explosions. And I know some people are speculating that this was nuclear. I think if that was happening, you know, we would already know, because there would be no lights on. But something's weird about this. They could have potentially hit the mother load in terms of Russia's more sophisticated weapons, and maybe that's why it was such a big explosion, because one of these storage facilities had some of the bigger weapons. I mean, for all we know, there was nuclear weapons stored here. I highly doubt it. I highly doubt that the U.S. would have authorized Ukraine to do that if this happened, because, of course, that would be World War III. That would be beyond acceptable to the Russians. They could not allow Ukraine to take out and start shooting at their weapon silos deep inside Russia, because some of those weapon silos could contain nukes. And if they did hit one that have had nukes using NATO ISR, they would have to then presume that this was a attempt to diminish their ability to respond to a full-blown war, and thus it's a nuclear threat. It's an existential threat. So how the Ukrainians did this, did they have bunker busters? Were they already using Storm Shadow? Were they using some kind of new ballistic technology that they have? Or were they using a bunker buster tech that NATO has given? Or was this the Baltics and it was the Russians are keeping under wraps because they don't want escalation? I don't know. Here's a closer up image. You can see all of the burn marks on there. So these things got leveled, man, like completely leveled. I guess if one of them blew up, and I'm assuming that this is where the big explosion took place, so they must have hit one smack dab in the middle, and that instantaneously blew up all the rest, because that explosion that we've seen, that was one giant explosion, and then you could see on other ends of the place there were other explosions that came up, so I don't have the image there. This is Ryan Ruth's home in Hawaii. Now, Fox News did a piece where they said they're trying to connect a bunch of dots and follow the breadcrumbs. And they're trying to say that this guy was funded by the CIA. Okay. And I still think he was a loon. If you look at this house, this is what an $800,000 will get you in Hawaii. Now, was this a mortgaged house? Was this a rented house? It does not look like a nice house. Okay, let's be honest. Back in the day, this is like, before the big bubble, this is the sub $100,000 house, easy. And you can see by the looks of his truck, it's not like he's a baller. People say that he flew business class. I don't know about that, but I can tell you, I know a lot of people who used to travel the world very cheap. It's easy if you do it frugally. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that he could go and fly to all these places. Now, again, I don't know. I just know that there's a lot of seriously over-medicated or under-medicated individuals that are very unhinged in our society. And I think we just have to expect that this Trump derangement syndrome, and there's Kamala derangement syndrome as well, but mostly Trump derangement syndrome is driving people mental. And all of the propaganda has led to a surge in stochastic terrorism like we're seeing. And this guy was just a loon. Even the Ukrainians didn't want him, allegedly. They kicked him out of the country because they're like, this guy's nuts. Budenov may get his marching papers very soon. Zelensky is doing another purge in the government. This guy has been one of the ones who's been there since the start. So I almost have to wonder, maybe they really are jumping ship. I had this theory about a year ago. I said, if they knew that their number was going to get called, what Zelensky would start doing was changing the government and that he would be the last to leave the sinking ship. The captain goes down with the ship. And so he's giving these guys a pass out. That's why Zaluzhny's out and many of the others have already been purged. And honestly, I bet you they've probably left the country, many of them, because if you're losing a war and you know that you're going to lose, then why wouldn't you get out while the getting is good? But you don't want to do it all at once. You want to kind of do it surreptitiously so that nobody really notices. Russia, for the first time ever, referred to Israel as a committing acts of terror. They seldom address Israel directly because in their minds, they believe that Israel is synonymous with the United States. And when they speak about Israel, they're really speaking about the United States. So they always speak in a very third party without addressing Israel specifically when they talk about acts of terrorism and how they don't condone this or that. Now, I want to show you guys this. This is crazy. Remember when I talked about the Matrix and how AI was going to fuel the Matrix because it could effectively create worlds in real time? Well, get a load of this. This is the next thing. This is why I don't play video games anymore, because I would never have any other time to do anything else.
We call this space imagine.
Let's see if we can get some volume here. This guy's a very soft talker. Anyways, I'll just explain what's happening on the screen. So essentially, what's happening is they're directing this AI. This is a program which the AI will create any environment, a playable environment. So if you want to create a game, you just say, I want you to create this type of game, and you can keep adding elements. Check this out. So they say, make a maze of cardboard boxes. So they make a maze full of cardboard boxes. It gets more interesting. Trust me, and the graphics are mind-blowing. They say, make it more complex. So they make it more complex, multi-level. They say, make some characters. So the thing makes some characters, and you can choose, select your weapon. Then you spawn into this world that you've created. Why am I holding the mic there when I'm not? Okay. And so you can pick what you want to do. Do you want to do battle royale, parkour, deathmatch? And so you can see pretty good, like lighting, ray tracing, all that good stuff. And you can set the rules of the game. And you can just basically give it instructions in an ongoing way. Now, why this is important is because this will be used as a means of control. As we enter into the future where, of course, everything is, people own nothing and be happy. And that's why they want you to buy Bitcoin. It's the definition of owning nothing and being happy. Lots of people are really happy to own a hell of a lot of nothing as long as they know that that nothing has some value and they can exchange it for something. But the day is going to come when you won't be able to do that either. They're going to use this in combination. You're going to see an expansion of the virtual world and a shrinking of your real world because you won't be able to afford anything beyond a pod-sized apartment. I got to say, this is probably the hippest thing that Kamala has ever said. I mean, I know some people are going to cringe when they hear me say that, but she said it. It's the realest thing she ever said.
if and somebody I that breaks in my house, they're getting shot.
Yes, yes, I hear that. I hear that.
And Oprah agrees. So if somebody comes in Kamala's house, they're getting shot. So you can imagine what the memes are already. Somebody breaks into my house, they're getting shot, and then they got all these people trying to get through the border wall. And please come in and make yourself at home, she says. Yeah. I think that the First or Second Amendment, gun rights, all of these issues, there's nothing inherent within the issue that makes it exclusive to one side of the political spectrum. It should not be the case. I, for one, have certain beliefs that align with the left and certain beliefs that align with the right. This trying to pigeonhole people into boxes and create labels is a very convenient way that they control people. It's called the Hegelian dialectic, and they want to try to put people in boxes. What they absolutely can't stand is a free and fluid thinker who cannot fit into one of those boxes. That's what they don't want. And if you don't go into one of those boxes, that's when trouble starts to come for you. If, as long as they, because of course, understand that if there is a preset, how would you say, a platform of ideas, then it's easy to actually, through counterintelligence, control said platform, right? So it's easy to control the Trump voters. It's easy to control the Harris voters. It really is, because they know that there's a certain, if you know that somebody votes for Trump because of the way our political system is structured, you know that they're probably pro-gun, they're pro-life, you know what the platforms are. So they're much more easier to control, right? So that's all I'm saying. If you want to stock up and support the channel, go check out CanadianPreparedness.com. We probably got about a dozen educational videos in the pipeline that I just haven't released because there's been too much going on. It's just seemed that it's never been timely. But we're going to start releasing those starting tomorrow. So stay tuned, and I will keep you apprised and give you my analysis if we have any more breaking news, which I think we will. In the coming days, it's very likely that we are going to see an escalation in hostilities. The war has already begun. If Lebanon doesn't realize that yet, then I guess Darwin is going to take over and do the job of the Israelis for them. But I have a sneaking suspicion that they're about to go into full-blown war. And it's not going to be referred to a full-blown war until they start using these longer-range weapons. When we cross the 100-kilometer and above line, that's when you know World War III has begun in the Middle East. Thanks for watching, guys. Take care. Canadian Prepper out.